Stepping onto the deck of the Falcon Flyer, Boland scowled. The yacht was empty, the crew murdered and stuffed into the hold, and there was no sign of the Scion or the Zodiacs. After refueling at the Lesser Cayman Island, Boland had flown through the night to land on Texas A&M University's private airstrip on Turtle Island. According to the LoJack signal, the last yacht had arrived over 5 hours ago at Galveston Harbor Club, Slip 37. The other yachts had already docked at various ports, the crews visually cleared by the orbiting watchdog satellite. Because of local cloud cover, the satellites had no idea as to the status of the crew of the Falcon Flyer. Zalharis was like quicksilver, always slipping between Boland's fingers, and the trail was already growing cold again. Boland headed for his rented Cadillac Seville, parked behind a knotted rope stretched between a line of painted anchors. The whole area was decorated in the same manner, as if it were an exhibit at an amusement park instead of a working dockyard. He spotted an old man fishing off the end of the jetty and changed direction.
Morning. How's the fishing?
So-so. I saw you on that fancy yacht over yonder. You looking for them fellas gave a bad check for their slip charges? You a skip tracer?
Let's say they have something I want and leave it at that.
Yep, you're a collector. Well, you're too late. They already left a couple hours ago.
Did you see a big man with a scar on his cheek? He'd be traveling with a bald man with a mustache, another with a ponytail, and a woman, muscular but very pretty.
That's them. Although I wouldn't say the lady was pretty. Nice tits, though. Big, anyway. That's what counts.
Say, any chance you saw them leave? There'd be a reward if it helps me find them.
No reward needed. It was a big green Ford truck. You know, the panel jobs with no windows in the rear. Sex vans, we used to call them in my day. Who need an apartment when you had a van without windows?
I prefer a convertible myself. It's always nice to have the option of leaving quick.
Oh, a ragtop man, eh? Yeah, I should have known from that hulking big caddy you came in.
Sharp eyes.
I'm old, not blind.
Did you manage to catch the license number?
Covered with mud, even though there ain't been rain here for days? That's pretty odd, huh? Look, cousin, you might want to forget going after them, if you know what I mean. They're bad news. Take my word on it.
I can't let them go. It's what I do.
Well, then, good luck to you, because your friends got a delivery from Jimmy G before they drove away.
Really? How big?
About the size of a shoebox.
It could be cash, but that wasn't anywhere near large enough to hold sufficient cash to buy a Zodiac. Perhaps the sale was in precious gems.
A while ago, I knew a guy in Dallas called Jimmy G. Mean Jim Green. Big fellow. Bad teeth.
You got the last name right, but that ain't Jimmy. He's skinny as a crackhead, and as nice as they come. Unless you cross him. A blade man. Likes to cut folks up. Not quite sure he's riding ahead. Works as a gopher for Dillard, a Mr. Ernest E. Dillard. Gorilla Dillard, and you know how he got that name.
Yes, Boland surely did. He didn't know the name, but the situation was as old as civilization. Dillard was the local boss, some tough who ran the drugs, gambling, and girls in the dockyard. Oh, Boland had met Ernest E. Dillard many times before in many cities. He had filled graveyards with Ernest Dillards, but there were always more standing in line to take his place and to feed at the trough of human misery. More importantly, Zalharis received the delivery of a shoebox, or something the size of a shoebox, only 2 hours after arriving in Galveston. What in the hell could that be?
Any idea where I can locate Jimmy?
Don't know where to find Jimmy. Gotta ask Dillard about that. And son, I'd rather face a shark than old gorilla. Ernie Dillard is mean clean through. Shoot, yeah. If a rattler bit Dillard, the snake would die, not him.
Thanks for the warning. Good luck with the fishing.
They have nothing to fear from me, Mac.
Caught in the middle of a step, Boland almost reacted to the name, until he realized it was merely the old man's way of being friendly. Finding the crime boss wouldn't be a problem. Men like that did everything but advertise their homes to show how well they were doing. Getting the man to roll over on Jimmy G was another matter entirely. The computer room was locked in a stillness, software programs running by the dozens, monitors flickering with the cascade of data pouring through the massive Cray supercomputers below. The coffee urn was drained and cold, plates of crumbs marking where stacks of sandwiches had once been at each console.
Got it! Bear, call Barbara and Hal. The Scion are auctioning the Zodiacs over the internet.
What? Where's the auction? I have half a dozen criminal identities we can use to join the auction to buy the bombs from the Scion. Afterward, we can settle the matter of just retribution.
Damn it, I don't know where it is. In virtual space or in the real world? The message I decoded was a reply from the Scion granting admittance to Liberty Peru to join the auction. I've got 16 more messages found on the internet, but each is encrypted differently. Without the key, it will take hours to bust each one. They could be nothing. Pornography sent between diplomats, love letters, or the details of the auction.
When's it going down?
Oh, if this is correct, then the bidding has already begun.
Ah, damn it. Okay, cancel all the other projects. Everybody grab a random T-burst from the queue, get cracking. Maybe we'll hit gold. I'll contact Hal and see about shutting down the internet.
The declaration was so easily said it sent chills down the spines of the hackers. There were four deliberately arranged nexus junctions that everything passed through. The information was unknown to the general public for just this reason. In a true emergency, the internet could be physically crashed and would stay down until it was safe to reactivate. But the cost would be terrible. Billions of dollars lost, companies going bankrupt, stock market dipping into a possible crash. Only the president had the authority to pull the plug on the world, but it was now time to alert the man to have his finger on the button. Almost any amount of financial turmoil would be worth saving an entire city, possibly millions of lives. Their faces grim, the hackers swiveled to the consoles and hunched over in a silent fury. The monitors filled with lines of code, the submonitors flashing with code breakers and counter-encryption algorithms.
We're too late. The auction is over.
When?
Just now. The buyer for Liberty Peru used the same codes for all of his emails, and only minutes ago informed the group that they lost the bid on both of the Zodiacs.
Both? But the Scion stole four, and one was used on the Tullamarine. That leaves three.
I know.
Kurtzman was livid. His cyber team was supposed to be the best in the world, and they had been outfoxed by the S2 agents like green recruits.
Did you get a physical location?
Sure. The T-Burst was sent all over the world and off six satellites. And I believe that the point of origin was somewhere in East Texas. Can't nail it down any tighter than that.
Must have been a hit-and-run operation. The bidders previously informed of a precise time to go online, and the whole thing lasted less than 5 minutes.
A cyberspace commando raid. An ingenious tactic, and damn hard to stop.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. Stryker's in Texas. I was just tracing Lojax for him. He's out of touch right now, gone undercover, but sounds like he may be right on top of things.
But the earlier statement still resonated inside the mind of the chief hacker. The Scion had placed two of the nuclear bombs in auction. So where was the third Zodiac? Covering several acres, Ernest Dillard's estate stretched leisurely along the shoreline, a stone wall running down the manicured lawn across the white sandy beach and into the water. The 8-foot-tall barrier effectively sealed off the property from every approach except the sky and served to keep out the local riffraff. Neighbors would have complained, only both of the properties on either side of the estate had mysteriously burned down one night, and no construction firm would accept the job of rebuilding there. The workmen preferred to keep their legs intact. At the private dock, a hovercraft and several hydrofoil speedboats were moored next to a 200-foot yacht that dominated the shore of Beechwood Hill. A fence of iron lace separated the shore from the lawn, huge mosaic patios meandering through groves of swaying trees to eventually lead to the sprawling mansion, richly decorated with terraces, cool marble alcoves, and red tile roofs. But armed men stood guard on the roof, while others walked the lush grounds, constantly in contact with their command center in the bomb-proof cellar. Ernest Dillard savored his lifestyle, and steadfastly refused to be anybody's fool. Several times in the past few years, his home had been attacked. What remained of the survivors had screamed out their lives in the basement of the Spanish-style manor, their prolonged agony artistically recorded on videotape and sold on the underground snuff film market. Dillard was famous for never missing a chance to make another buck. and the film served the double purpose of also making his enemies reconsider the wisdom of trying to whack the King of Galveston, or else they might become the star of his next movie. There were no recurring roles. A row of cabanas surrounded the freeform swimming pool. Natural boulders placed in strategic positions gave protection from snipers out at sea, and formed a beautiful waterfall, behind which were hidden coves where guests could relax in private debauchery. Several large men were swimming in the pool or relaxing in the chaise lounges, and a dozen beautiful girls of various nationalities strolled around or lay on towels, sunning themselves to a golden tan. There was a long buffet table attended by liveried staff, dutifully serving the revelers from the assortment of gourmet food and endless array of liquor. A major holiday was coming soon, and the Galveston crew was celebrating a few days early. Lying face down on a chaise lounge, a red bull of a man was receiving a massage from a tall blonde in a black lace bikini. Dressed in loose satin trunks, Ernest Dillard was covered with coarse hair, the origin of the secret nickname of Gorilla. But the police officer who had first called him that was never seen in town again. Gorilla Dillard ruled Galveston with an iron fist, killing anyone he could not intimidate, blackmail, or bribe. Starting to work on the man's wide shoulders, the blonde pressed her large breasts against his back.
Lose the top, sweetheart.
Reaching behind her back, the girl undid the laces of the tiny scrap of cloth, and it fluttered to the ground. Leaning over the mob boss again, the girl traced her long nails gently along his spine and started moving her palms in tight circles on his lower back when one of the bodyguards walked over.
Yeah, Billy, what is it?
Tom at the front gate says we have a visitor. Big guy, black hair, rented car.
Well, that could be 100 people I know. You got a name?
Driver's license and gun permit have the name Matthew Cooper. Says he has some information you want.
Like what?
Says it's for you only. Should I get rid of him?
No, I'm curious. Let him in. But check him for wires.
Tom, the boss says it's okay. Harry, Tony, make sure he's clean or it's your ass.
It's their heads. Honey, enough of that. Give me a beer.
Sure thing, baby.
Dillard grinned at the sight of the girl walking away. Damn, she was hot. Then his attention swiveled as a big man entered, as if he owned the place. Dillard had seen the type before. This was a hitter, all muscle and oiled steel. Harry held up a palm to stop the newcomer, while Tony brandished a 9mm Uzi to cover them both. Meanwhile, the bodyguards on the roof had slipped the Remington sniper rifles off their shoulders, ready for trouble. The stranger coolly used two fingers to pull back his sports jacket to reveal a belt holster with a nickel-plated Glock 21 pistol. The gun was taken, and the expert search continued until the guard was satisfied.
Hiya, Ernie.
That's Mr. Dillard, asshole. Smart-mouth me again and you die.
Everybody dies. Here, I brought you something.
About to taste his beer, Dillard placed the bottle aside to pick up the leather booklet. He scowled when he saw it was a bank book. Flipping through, he caught the amount in the account.
What is this, a bribe? 100 grand is chump change. I use 50s to wipe my ass.
Can you still use those as legal tender?
Shit, no.
Only the guards stayed grim, watching the stranger with hands tight on the grips of their weapons.
Okay. So it's not a bribe. What does this have to do with me?
Check the name.
Bullshit, it's a fake.
Suit yourself. I just thought you'd like to know, and maybe cut a deal.
Deal? What kind of deal?
That 100 grand is deposited in the name of James Harold Green. Jimmy G is narking you out, or skimming the take. Either way, you're being taken for a ride.
I could be. Jimmy's a snake. But exactly how did you find out about this?
I have my sources.
Yeah, my boys can beat it out of you.
They can try.
You got any proof?
What more do you need? Or do you pay Jimmy enough for him to save that kind of green?
The bank deposit had completely cleaned out Boland's war chest, but would be worth it if the trick paid off. However, the crime boss was rightfully suspicious of anything that seemed so easy. Bolin could use that.
Okay. Let's say Jimmy is skimming the till. Now, where do you come in?
Seems to me you're soon going to have an opening in your public relations department. Someone not greedy or stupid enough to cross you.
Mm-hmm. You want Jimmy's job?
Why not? I wouldn't steal anywhere near as much as he does. Besides, I'm not very photogenic.
Leaning forward in the lounge, Dillard frowned at that, not sure if it was a joke. Since this had nothing to do with her, Honey walked over to another chaise lounge and laid down, crossing her long legs at the ankles. They were talking business. When the monster wanted her back, he'd let her know.
I don't scare you.
No.
I should.
Likewise.
Well, you talk a good game, but I don't know you from shit. And I don't like the idea of losing a good man.
Mr. Dillard, you don't have a good man. You got a punk with balls for brains.
Catching the subtle change in the man's tone, Dillard glanced at the bank book. The feds wouldn't toss that kind of change just to sneak a man into his organization. They didn't have the funds. And he paid a fortune to the goddamn state politicians to make sure the cops didn't have access to that kind of capital.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but how do I know you're kosher?
Want me to clip someone? Sure. How about Jimmy?
Ah, my own people can handle that. How about a simpler test, right here, right now?
Standing, the crime boss walked closer to Bolin, his head barely reaching the other man's shoulder. The guy was hairy, short, and wide, and Bolin could see why he had gotten the nickname Gorilla so early in his brutal career.
See that blonde over there, without the top?
Dillard pointed at Honey. Unconcerned with her partial nudity, the woman was rubbing suntan lotion into her stomach with long, smooth motions, her painted fingernails glistening in the bright sunlight. Bolin nodded in frank approval. He would have to be blind to miss the buxom beauty.
Sure. Nice stuff. That my reward?
No, that's not even close. She's a target. Kill her, and you're hired. Billy, give him a piece.
Honey froze as Billy reached under his coat and pulled out a Colt 45 pistol. He tossed it over and Bolin made the catch.
Ernie? Baby? Is this some sort of joke?
Head or the heart?
Although he was trying hard not to show it, Bolin was caught completely off guard by this, his brain racing for a way out. But if he balked or refused, the snipers on the roof would burn him on the spot.
In the head. Make it snappy.
No problem.
Stumbling to her bare feet, Honey started to back away.
Please, Ernie. Baby, I've been good to you.
Striding forward, Bolin advanced upon the weeping woman and grabbed her by the hair to hold her still as he stuffed the gun barrel just behind an ear.
Nothing personal. Just business.
Stop! God, you are a cold bastard. Okay, you're legit. Let her go.
Whatever you want, sir.
Dillard heard the addition of the honorific and nodded in approval. Smart man and a stone killer. Trembling all over, Honey tumbled to the grass. Several of the other girls rushed over to wrap a towel around their friend and walk her to a cabana.
Julie, give me a beer.
A redhead left the group to rush to the buffet table and bring over a fresh beer, standing near the crime boss with a forced smile on her pale face. Keeping his own face neutral, Bolin felt the tension drain away. That had been close. He had been stalling for precious seconds, and if pressed, he would have fired the gun near the woman and thrown her into the pool as a diversion, then grabbed Dillard as a shield and tried to shoot his way to the hovercraft at the dock.
Anybody else here you're unhappy with?
Bolin looked directly at Billy. The guard blanched, then Bolin tossed the Colt on the ground near his shoes.
Cooper, you made an ice, a fucking Iceman. That's what I'm going to call you. Matthew Ice.
Cooper will do fine. It holds down any unauthorized fraternizing with the staff.
God damn it, Cooper, you're a pisser. Fraternizing with the staff like this is a war movie, right? You hear that, Julie? It's got kills me.
Oh, he's a killer, all right. I better be careful or he's going to just eat me up alive.
I've already had lunch, but I'll be hungry again later.
Anytime.
Sit down, Cooper. Join the party, meet the rest of the boys. Julie, find this man a friend.
The slim redhead looked at Bolin with hungry eyes, and he got the feeling that she would be the one showing the soldier a good time, and as soon as possible.
Sounds good, sir, but Jimmy should be taken care of first. Be happy to do it for you. I could use a job right now. Don't like to be called off in the middle. Makes me tense.
Smiling grandly, Ernest Dillard finally relaxed. So that was the catch. Cooper was a blood addict. He loved to kill like other guys liked sex. Excellent. He could use a man like that.
Sure, sure. Have fun. The little traitor's yours.
Got an address?
Yeah, he lives at the Golden Hell Spa. It's a whorehouse over on Dulvet Street.
Thanks.
Help yourself to one of the girls over there if you want. On the house.
Sounds good.
Bet your ass it's good. You know, someday we'll be too old for the ladies, Cooper. All a man's gonna remember is every piece of tail he ever turned down.
I'll be wearing pine by then.
Wearing pine? Oh, God damn it, Cooper! You are a funny guy. I think we're gonna get along just fine. Now, you be sure to come on back here when you're done. I mean, this party's just getting started. It's gonna last for days.
For a brief slice of eternity, Bolin looked at the cabana that Honey had taken refuge in, then turned to smile coldly at Dillard. Julie caught his eye.
You will be back, right?
Count on it.
Throwing up a rainbow spray in its wake, the old Cajun airboat skimmed along the surface of the Louisiana Bayou, the thick rushes parting in front of it like wheat in the wind. Cypress and tupelo trees rose from the muddy banks of small isles, their branches heavy with Spanish moss and countless small birds. Sitting high in the rear, Minas Pedrosa was at the helm, guiding the airboat by angling the gigantic fan that drove the craft. Cirelus Alhares and Georgina Misne occupied the two front seats, caseless rifles lying across their laps. Dog Mariano was back on dry land, guarding the truck and the rest of their equipment. He was also serving as a rear guard in case the customers today decided to play fast and loose. The buyers weren't famous for keeping their word. Treachery was more than expected. It was practically mandatory. But their price had been the highest, and so the Scion had agreed to sup with the devil of the German terrorist group, Volksfeber. Bolted to the deck of the airboat between Zalhares and Misne was an old wooden box, normally used to store fishing tackle or dead chickens to toss to the swamp gators for the amusement of tourists. Now the simple crate held two battered briefcases and the harnessed power of an exploding sun. Creepers hung heavy from the banyan trees, their raised roots exposed like a nest of snakes magically cast into wooden statues. Thick snakes glided through the murky green water, the insect life as dense as fog in some places. But to the Brazilians it felt like home, and they had come well equipped with various forms of bug repellents to handle the minor inconvenience of the mosquitoes. Reaching some open water, majestic desolation spread in front of the airboat for a great distance.
Head for the chimes. That's where we'll find our buyer.
Pedrosa headed in that direction, comparing the compass on his wrist with the chimes to slowly find a small island lost in a maze of trees, creepers, and wild vegetation. There was no dock, but a section of the shoreline was a mudflat.
Mind the alligators.
I used to live on the Amazon River. I am supposed to be frightened of some slow American alligators?
Misne jerked her hand away just in time to avoid the clashing teeth. Splashing furiously over the missed food, the gator slammed the airboat with its tail, rocking the craft dangerously.
Woman, you endanger us with this foolishness. You enjoy killing too much. Sometimes it is wise to be quiet. Mice thrive when tigers die.
In this noisy machine? The Germans knew we were coming from miles away.
And what of the Delta police?
I look forward to meeting them. Oh, yes.
There it is. Gracious sense.
The cabin was in ruins. The ripped screen windows hung ajar. The roof was riddled with holes and the porch steps sagged as if the old wood were melting in the moist swamp air. The men turned to see a group of hunters in a small patch of dry land located under the spreading branches of a tupelo tree. The Spanish moss cut away to form a sort of doorway in the natural covering. Circling a crude campfire, sitting on cinder blocks, were four men in worn hunter's clothing. Bolt-action rifles rested on their shoulders, the sewn pockets of their flannel shirts lined with shiny brass cartridges. But the blonde men weren't Cajun by any stretch of the imagination. Their Nordic skin was far too pale, their designer boots brand new, and their mirrored sunglasses and elaborate watches obviously expensive. The Atchafalaya Swamp was a wildlife preserve and river basin, and while a few poor souls tried to eke out a living there, none of them could afford the fine apparel on display among the four large men.
You're right on time. We like punctuality. It is a sign of high intelligence.
And we like cash.
Zalhares lifted a briefcase and stepped off the airboat. Then Mizne did the same with the other briefcase, slipping on a pair of handcuffs, locking the handle of the briefcase onto her wrist. Pedrosa remained in the airboat with one hand on the controls, the other resting on his lap near his open hunting vest.
The official name of the moon is Luna. The sun is called Sol.
The planet Saturn was originally called George.
International Astronomy Conference, London, England.
It was in 1965 and ratified again in 1985.
That is correct.
Both sides relaxed slightly, assured that they were talking to the proper people. The exchange had almost been a formality in the situation. If either had been American agents, they would have started shooting on sight.
Care for some coffee? It's still hot.
There is no need for perfunctory pleasantries. We have the Zodiac. Do you have the money?
We have your payment. 42 million in cut gems.
The fourth German stood to flip over the cinder block and lift out a small jeweler's bag of fine leather. A foot wide and some 6 inches thick, the pouch lay heavy in his open hand.
Our payment was to be 5 million in cash, plus 35 million in gems. Not all gems.
Which is five are paying 42 million in gems. There simply was not enough time to convert a portion of them into hard currency.
The additional 2 million should be more than sufficient compensation for the inconvenience. Don't you agree?
In the airboat, Pedrosa released the controls and placed both hands on his knees, bending forward slightly so that his vest gaped a little to expose the set of pistols holstered in his belt. Behind Zalhares, Mizne closed the briefcase and locked it tight with a loud snap.
The gems will be fine. Show me.
Folding back a section, the pouch spread wide, exposing dozens of small compartments made of clear plastic, each completely filled with colored gems of different sizes and clarities.
As requested, only blue-white diamonds, 4 to 6 carats, plus uncut emeralds and sapphires, but no rubies. Why not rubies?
The synthetic are too difficult to tell from the real gems. Actually, it is impossible to tell them apart, which is why artificial rubies have an identification code carved into them to prevent fraud.
Really? I did not know that. How interesting.
Stop. Minas, check the gems.
You do not trust us?
No.
That is good. Trust is for fools.
Leaving the airboat, the S2 agent joined the man on the wet ground and produced a jeweler's loop, setting the magnifying device around his head and turning on the small light alongside the lens. Wiping his hands clean on his pants, Pedrosa started to lift out random gems to inspect them one at a time.
And you are the expert in gems?
Yes.
What is your professional opinion?
Taking it slow, Pedrosa ran through several emeralds before replying.
Acceptable. 42 million is an accurate assessment of the value.
Of course. Now, show us the Zodiac.
One of the Germans rose and moved closer to inspect the machinery before taking out a small device and running it back and forth over the bomb.
It's real, and not armed to detonate.
Excellent. Now!
Four men rose from the scummy water around the island wearing alligator-colored scuba suits, their hands gripping 9mm Steyr submachine guns, safely sealed inside plastic bags.
Fools!
Nobody move! Peter, check it!
It's another Zodiac. It is primed to explode.
You brought two of them. An unexpected move. Very clever.
No. Elementary tactics.
All right. Turn it off, or else...
Or else what? Kill me and vaporize yourselves? I think not.
Zalhares moved in with a boxer's grace and violently backhanded the man across the face.
You'll pay for that, shrine.
Wrong again. Now choose your next move carefully, Nazi. Because I am prepared to die. Are you?
Am I prepared to die? Yes, I am. But not over this. Hans, give them the jewels.
Hans gave the jeweler's bag to Pedrosa, who returned to the airboat and tucked it safely into the wooden box between the seats, then resumed his post at the controls.
All right, Scheißkopf. Turn off that Zodiac and hand it over, and we shall go our separate ways.
Waving away a swarm of annoying gnats, Zalhares simply couldn't believe the staggering arrogance of the man. And these were the Darwinian supermen who had thought to rule the world? Pitiful.
Mine stays armed until we are long gone from here. Georgina, give me your Zodiac.
Satisfied?
Almost. There is just one small detail to settle.
What now?
Minas, Mizne, now!
One of the Germans jerked wildly from the barrage of 9mm rounds, walking backward and waving wildly. He toppled over an exposed root and fell into the swamp to slowly begin to sink. The scuba divers started toward the man, then stopped when it was clear there was nothing that could be done to assist the riddled corpse.
There is always a price to pay for failure. We left your scientist alive to operate the Zodiac, but the jeweler had served his purpose.
He was a cousin, a blood relative.
Now he is nothing.
Move along, Adolf. You have 5 minutes to leave before we come hunting for him.
As the Germans moved into the hanging curtain of thick green moss, the Brazilians walked backward toward the airboat, watching for more trickery. Pedrosa kept a gun in hand as the others strapped themselves into the chairs. When they were a good distance from the moss-shrouded islands, Minas revved the engine and began to skim along their original route toward the distant culvert near Interstate 10, where Mariano would be waiting for them in the truck.
Fools! Dangerous fools!
Her eyes still shining with pleasure, Mizne said nothing.
How much money do we have left?
A couple of thousand American dollars and 1,000,000 Mexican pesos. We don't dare convert those without fear of exposing ourselves to the FBI. We shall have to find some other source of ready cash to reach our next delivery.
We are millionaires and paupers at the same time? Only in America.
The lack of money is a minor problem. Once we reach the next state, I will scan the police vans and find us a likely target.
I do not wish to take such actions. It will put us at some risk of exposure.
And what is life without risk? Come, my friend, the risk is minimal. We have done such things before.
But only when necessary. Personally, I shall be glad to leave this place. The stink of those German fools has made even the richness of the swamp untenable.
Bolan walked around the corner and into the crowded parking lot of the whorehouse, noting the uncut tall grass that started exactly where the parking lot stopped. A red light illuminated the front door. Rising 3 stories high, every window was closed with a curtain that blocked any light from escaping. But directly under the red bulb on the front porch was a young woman in a cane rocker and sucking on a lollipop. Dressed in a skin-tight spandex top and high-cut denim shorts, her appearance left no doubt as to the nature of the intimate services offered here.
Hi, handsome. I'm Candy. Would you like a lick?
Maybe later.
Inside, Bolan found himself in a short hallway that emptied into a front room, cheaply done in wood paneling, and decorated with framed centerfolds from men's magazines. The air was a terrible mixture of overly sweet perfume and industrial pine disinfectant. Near a hallway closed off with a beaded curtain was a small metal desk with an older woman sitting behind it, filing her long blue nails. Her platinum hair was piled high and stiff with spray, her white cotton dress cut low to show a lot of cleavage, but loose enough to hide her plus-size belly. Yet in spite of her weight, the woman still had rather shapely legs stretched out under the desk, toes wiggling in ankle-strap wedgies from another era. From the hard expression on her face, like a frontline general determined to make sure the troops did their job with the minimum of goofing off, Bolan deduced that she was the madam who ran the sex shop. The carpet was blood red, and the ceiling was painted black, with a long velour couch across the room. 4 anxious men of various ages sitting there and trying very hard not to look at one another, even though they were all there for the same reason. Additional centerfolds adorned the walls above the couch, with more sex mags stacked loosely on the end tables and coffee table.
Hello, gorgeous! Are you a member of the Golden Spa? Boy, you sure should be. I mean, a real looker like you.
I'm here to see Green. Now.
Who was that again?
James Green, and stop wasting my time. I work for Gorilla.
All pretense vanished, and she reached under the desk for a moment. A few seconds later, a hidden door set in the wood paneling swung open, and out stepped a large man in a black t-shirt and loose chino pants tucked into army boots. Bolin didn't need to ask if this was the bouncer. He looked the part. His hair was cut short, so an opponent couldn't grab it in a fight, and there was the leather strap of a blackjack sticking out of his hip pocket to quietly subdue the more violent customers who refused to pay, leave, or were unhappy with the services rendered.
Yes, Miss Miranda?
The gentleman wants to see Mr. Green.
The bouncer looked Bolin up and down, then shrugged and turned around, going back into the camouflage door. Bolin followed him in. A long stairwell stretched sharply ahead, the only other door in sight being on the third floor. Reaching the top, the bouncer swung open the thin plywood door and moved into a short hallway lushly carpeted and lined with closed doors. There was no noise coming from behind any of them, so Bolin guessed these were private rooms for the special parties of executive guests.
Office at the end.
Thanks. Now go wait downstairs.
This room was radically different from the ground floor of the brothel. Clean plaster walls were painted a light pastel color, making the place seem larger than it really was. A heavy brass bed was tucked into one corner of the room, the linens neatly made. A big mahogany desk stood near French-style windows, and sitting in a velvet wing-backed chair was a skinny man with wavy blonde hair. His woven leather sandals were lying on the carpet, his bare feet resting on an ottoman. Everything in the room was expensive and clashed. It was a den of wealth adorned with absolutely nothing of taste.
Jimmy G.
Yeah, the pizza here already?
It's been canceled.
What the shit? Son of a bitch, who the fuck are you?
When there was no reply, he turned and went pale as his gaze locked with Bolin's. All of the rebellion flowed out of the man as if a valve had been opened.
Hey there, right? That is...
Stuff it, Jimmy. My employers aren't happy with you.
Bolin made Jimmy strain to hear the words. It was an old trick that forced the person being interrogated to concentrate on hearing what was being said, which made it much harder for them to come up with lies.
Your employers?
Jimmy risked a glance at the desk. Bolin guessed there was a gun hidden there.
Nice browning you have here.
Oh, shit.
The package you delivered on the dock. My employer is very unhappy with the quality.
Bolin reached in a pocket for a pack of cigarettes. After fishing for a smoke and finding it empty, he tossed it into the trash can by the desk.
Hey, that's bullshit, man. Those were all top quality, and legit, too. The real McCoy.
Bolin racked the slide to eject the bullet in the chamber, then tossed the useless browning onto the bed. Jimmy darted his eyes for a second, then looked back to find Bolin pointing the Beretta in his direction.
Okay. Only some of them were fakes. But there hadn't been enough time to get all 50. I mean, really, some of those weird states like South Dakota and Iowa, who the fuck wants to go there anyway, for Christ's sake?
Bolin instantly understood what he was talking about. License plates. The shoebox-sized package had actually been a bundle of license plates for a vehicle. That way, the Scion could travel across the country and not be stopped by highway patrol for having out-of-state plates.
A few of them, Jimmy.
All right, most of them. But hey, they were top quality. You gotta admit that much. Absolutely top quality.
Which ones, Jimmy?
Hey, I really don't remember, but I got it in my book. It's in the desk.
I'll give you 1 minute.
Here you go. South Dakota, Iowa, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Delaware, and Maine. See? Nobody states. Total crap. Who needs them, eh? It's not like I missed New York or California or someplace important.
Just a minute. The truck came with Texas plates. You gave them 50 anyway. What about the foreign plate?
Hey, that Mexican plate was legit. I mean, shit, it's right over the border. No biggie to get a plate there.
And there it was, their escape route. Mexico. That was how the Scion planned to leave the country and drive back to South America. Or maybe stop at Panama and hop another freighter. Zalharis was going to circle, land in Texas, drive around delivering the Zodiacs, and then back through Mexico to freedom.
We want replacements, Jimmy. Real plates this time, or it's your ass.
Sure, sure, sure. No problem. I can have them for you by tomorrow, noon. At the very latest, 1 o'clock. All right, by noon. Guaranteed.
Not enough.
And half the money back for fucking it up, okay? That's only fair, right? Hey, we gotta be fair. So where do you want them delivered, Mr.
Cooper.
Right, okay. Mr. Cooper, where do you want the plates delivered? I gotcha. I'll call the boss and ask. No problem. I'm on the case. But you know, Mr. Cooper, sir, that refund is gonna come right out of my cut, leaving me with shit. Old man Dillard takes all the rest. A man has gotta make a living. Hey, I got kids to feed.
Tell me another one, Jimmy. If Gorilla knew anything about this deal, you'd be in pictures.
Yeah, well, you know how it goes. A dollar here and there, steal a little, not a lot. Private enterprise, the Lord helps those who help themselves and all that shit.
Hallelujah. By noon, Jimmy, or Gorilla will be the least of your worries.
Boland paused in the hallway and slipped on an earpiece, then turned up the volume on the radio in his pocket. For a moment, Boland could only hear the crackle of the plastic expanding back into shape. Then the special filter created by Gadget Schwartz for the microtransmitter inside the cigarette pack kicked in.
Hey, it's me. Some guy was just in my fucking office. Called himself Cooper. Isn't that the name of the new button man for Dillard?
That caught Boland by surprise. How had he learned about that so quickly? Gorilla had to have a leak in the organization. Probably Julie or one of the other girls working there.
Yeah, makes no sense to me either. If Dillard wanted me iced, then why was this guy pretending to be from Zalhara's? Oh, shit. He's a cop. That must be it, Julie. He's a fucking cop. I gotta go. Hello, Mr. Dillard? This is me. Now, don't hang up. I want to cut a deal for my life. There's a cop here that... Hello? Hello? You son of a bitch. Hang up on me, will you? You hairy-assed bastard. Yeah. Hello. I would like to leave a message for Mr. Zodiac, please.
That was one phone call Boland couldn't let the man complete. A single mention that someone was asking about them could send the Scion into hiding for months, and the Zodiacs would be sold and long gone before the Brazilians were found again, if ever. Pumping blood from his chest and throat, Jimmy slammed backward into the wall.
Hello? Hello, is anybody there?
Boland started to hang up, then realized the old-fashioned telephone didn't have a redial button. There was no way for him to learn where the call was coming from without some cooperation from the other caller.
Have Mr. Zodiac call me at this number immediately.
Taking a chair, Boland waited. Now it was only a matter of time. An answering service was a smart move. They were hard to beat without raiding the office for the referring phone numbers written in a log. But there was always a way around that. Sometimes it worked, sometimes not. But it was Boland's best chance at a fast fix on the bombs.
Zodiac here.
Why, hello, Mr. Zodiac. This is National Cellular Phone Telecorporation, and we want to make you an exciting offer on additional long-distance and roaming charges.
Boland waited with bated breath until the telephone rang again. He couldn't do anything until Zodiac called back. If the S2 agent was calling on a cell phone, this wouldn't work, but there was always the chance that he would be using a landline to avoid speaking over the air and getting caught by an NSA echelon satellite monitoring all cell phone calls.
National phone. Our business is the world. How may I help you?
Good. Now that Zalhares had checked and was hopefully convinced the first call had been just a random sales call, he was free to tap in the Star 69 code, hoping that Jimmy G had the service. Luckily he did, and the robotic operator dutifully read Boland back the last incoming number. Tapping the phone with a finger, Boland got a dial tone and contacted the operator to get the location for the area code. Mr. Zodiac had just called from Louisiana.
Bear, I need the street location on a phone number, and fast.
Faster than you think. We found evidence of an online auction for two of the Zodiac cases. The deal has likely already been brokered since the auction itself closed recently.
And it came from East Texas.
Bolin was tired and hungry. It had been too long since his last meal, and sleep was a distant memory. Soon he'd have to catch some shut-eye, whether he wanted to or not.
That's the best we could zero it in. Oh, thanks, Akira. Okay, here it is, Stryker. That phone number was for room 19, Delta View Hotel, 1498 Main Street, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Baton Rouge, eh? Thanks, Bear.
Anything else?
Yeah, better have Barbara get Able Team and Phoenix Force ready. I may need some backup on this if the nukes go in different directions.
No problem. Call us if you need anything else. Anything at all. Good luck. You don't need me to tell you this, but don't...
Don't leave the phone behind to be traced. No problem, Bear.